Anyway, you were telling me about the railroad station.
Okay, well, anyway, we got on the train and we left out that night. We got on the train, man, we could see right now we were going to be in for a nice ride because it's been in July, you know, it's hot. And come to find out, we couldn't close the windows to do any good with air conditioning because the air conditioner had gone out. So anyway, here we ride, setting up in those, you know, chairs. And those of us that could did, and those that couldn't didn't. And there we fell asleep. We woke up the next morning. Of course, we all just had our T-shirts on, white T-shirts. And the time we got that cold smoke coming in through the windows, and those of us that were lucky enough to have sunglasses, why, our view was that you'd go look in the mirror, you'd have a ring of white around your eyes, and then the rest of your face would be black with smut, you know. But, of course, I think the next morning when we washed up and went to eat breakfast, of course, I think we really ate good as far as eating, to the point that, well...
Did they have a diner car?
Yeah, yeah.
They serve you on linen and stuff, or they just served you...
Depending on where we were as to whether or not they could close the windows, Frank. If they could close the windows, yes, we had linen and even cloth napkins, too. Which, boy, that was something unusual, isn't
it? It was.
But that was what our majority of time going was spent doing. Getting up, well, I said, well, of course, we'll get up. But when we would go for meals, nearly every time the train would stop in certain areas to kind of let us off to, you know, exercise. And then after a little exercising and this and that, well, we'd get back on the train and hook up, and here we go again. And I never will forget what an impressive sight it was when we pulled in to the Washington area, and you could see the Capitol and some of the national monuments in the background, you know, like the Capitol Dome and the Washington Monument and some of those higher buildings. And then when we got to our campsite where we were assigned, well, there were several troops assigned there in that spot. Did you ever get down the troops that were assigned? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Then we could see how it was, the overall picture was going to be eventually. And then looking through those stories there, I kind of got intrigued with the number of swappings that went on between horned toads and small alligators. And some annex that took place, and some of the in a way, to kind of show you how immature, you might say, that some of the adults were that were taking those news photography were, because, of course, to them it was important that they get the news story. And I guess some of them were willing to do and go to just whatever extent is needed to get the news story that would be real acceptable by their news facilities. But overall, it... we managed to live, and of course, you know, it, like I mentioned prior, it rained every day, sometime during the day, either in the morning or evening, and we had to sleep under the kitchen tent a time or two, and you know, I think that was a mess. Move your cot out and your sleeping bag and your headdress and all that, and try to keep those dadgum feathers dry. But we managed to get home in good shape.
Were y'all in the big show? Were y'all in the opening show or anything of the Jamboree?
Yeah, yeah.
Describe that to me.
Okay, of course, you look at the map and it'll show you where the opening was. And they had a, if I remember correctly, I glanced at that article, that they had James West was there and Uncle Dan Beard was there. And, of course, now, Frank, to be honest with you, those of us who came from this part of the world. We were not, I would say, as impressed, or were we as enthused about putting on the show like the kids from the northern states. Because I mean by that, they were accustomed to, well, let's say with a basketball game, I mean a baseball game, you know, how they would have those big ticker parades and all that. We were not accustomed to that, and I know a bunch kind of mentioned a few things, not that they resented, but they couldn't see any purpose of that. See, here they were wanting us, we were up there to see, and here they were, well, for a better word, they were trying to push us in to a show situation where we wanted to go up and see
what other people were
doing.
Not what y'all were doing.
But anyway, like I said, there was some grumbling, and I know our adult leaders had their problems with us. And
but y'all did participate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. I know in the opening ceremony, God, I don't remember how many thousands were there, and you talk about a mess of humanity. Boy, I'll tell you what, you didn't know which way you were going, actually. And I, the more I think about it now, the more I admire those who were in charge of it, how well they handled it, see. But because, like I said, our thought was, man, here we're doing something that we got no business doing. We come up here to watch something done, not to be seen us doing it. And
you remember seeing Roosevelt? Did you get to see him?
Oh, yeah, Lord, yeah. I was, you know, I mean.
Describe that to me.
Okay. The first time seeing Roosevelt, we were taking a tour through the White House. And then I recall a dignified-looking gentleman coming to our lineup and saying, you come with me. Maybe took three of us. So we, of course, man, we didn't know what else to do, but big old bruiser. And we went with him. And he took us into the Oval Office. And, of course, Roosevelt was sitting behind his chair in the wheelchair. And the old boy introduced us to the president and said, boys, this is the president of the United States. And he wanted to congratulate you and howdy with you for being here from your respective states. Of course, it just thrilled us a bit. Here we had talked to a president. And, you know, that kind of reminds me of John. I never will forget when Governor, God Almighty. Anyway, the governor of the state of Texas was coming up here for a Chamber of Commerce banquet. And Jim had told John that he was going to come through here with the president and come right up from the airport going up to the Army. So John, I still got the sign out there. John painted a sign and put it on a stick and said, "Welcome to Governor Briscoe." And it was cold that evening, Frank. You can't imagine it. So he got out there on the side of the street with that sign when that procession came by. Okay. Of course, Jeanette and I went to the banquet, but we didn't take the boys. So we go to the banquet, and I had promised John that I would get the governor's autograph. So he, when it's all over with, I went up to him and I said, "Governor, my son would very much like to have your autograph, if you wouldn't mind." And he said, who is your son? And I told him. He said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "We've already taken care of him." Okay, what had happened? When he got to the armory and he noticed what had taken place, he was asking Jim about it, and Jim told him who the boy was and that I was a scoutmaster and this and that. So he takes a Texas Ranger, gives him a fountain pen, gives him something else, Hell, I don't know what all he gave. And John came here, of course my mother was, you know, was alive, and they were living next door. And he got in, rang the doorbell, and John went to the door and looked at that big old tall. And he told him, he said, son, I want, he said, my name is Ranger so-and-so, I'm with the governor. And he said, the governor sent me down with this stuff to give to you. Of course, John accepted it. Well, of course, the old boy left. Man, when I got home, I did get his signature on the program. I thought, my God, you done good, boy. And I told him, John, I said, you ought to see what I got. And he said, huh, if you think you got something, look what I've got. Of course, we didn't tell each other what we had. Right. And it was quite something. But anyway, well, that's the same way I was when with the president.
Did you get his autograph?
We did get... But Frank, you got to remember now, as I mentioned before, boys from this area then were not as star crazy as you see these kids going to these baseball games, you know, and have fit to get an autograph. We kind of based everybody on their own recognition or their own doing. We didn't have to have a signature or an autograph to make him
authenticated
a big thing in our mind, see. But we did enjoy it. But anyway, then later that morning, see, this took place about 10 o'clock in the morning. Then just prior to the sometime in the evening, he came back through again, riding in the open car with his T-men or T agents. And there was, mentioning again, alligator swapping. And these kids, we were standing next to each other, you know, hey, you might have a Texas boy and a Oklahoma boy. That you weren't all just lined up. Here we were there to pay respect as the president went from the White House to the Capitol. And with these Louisiana kids, they were there to deliver. And damn it, they were going to deliver an alligator to me. Of course, that kid ran out to the car, his open vehicle, and dropped an alligator in his lap. Well, of course, needless to say, the T-men riding in that vehicle on the fenders, of course, then the car had fenders in it. Then they grabbed that kid and hauled him off. And luckily, it was resolved that there was nothing problems there, that it wasn't an assassination attempt. Because, you know, I don't know, I guess people still had to hide it in. You could assassinate a president, whether he's in an open car or sitting in a room. But it all...
created some excitement.
Oh, God. A gob of it.
So you got to see the president twice at the Jamboree, 37.
Yeah. Yeah, one in the White House and one in the... Of course, over the year... Of course, I got... As I tell these guys, I said, well, at least I shook hands with... They get to talking about something. I said, well, you dumbasses. I said, at least I shook hands with the president and I knocked the president of the United States down. They wouldn't know how I knocked him down. Well, see, well, when I came back out of the Air Force, I was put in the hospital at Brooks General Hospital and stayed there for 2 years. And so then Roosevelt, you know, came out of the military and... was made chief of staff. Then he, of course, you know, you realize he ran for president, and he was making an inspection tour of all the military facilities under the Army's command. And I know he came to Brooks General Hospital in San Antonio, and I had an appointment to go to a dermatologist. And I went to the building, the main building, and nobody came to the elevator, so I had to run up three flights of stairs, and I came out of the stairwell, and I turned to go to my appointment, and man, I hit something. I didn't know what it was, but when I managed to get on my hands and knees, Ike was under me. I had knocked him down.
Course, Eisenhower?
Yeah, and his aide had pulled me off of him, and... He of course, he asked me my name, rank, and serial number, where I, what theater, operation I'd served and this and that, how long I'd been in the hospital. So then he turned to the surgeon of the hospital there and said, well, if all your patients under your care here improved like this one, you're doing a good job. Of course, he told me to carry on. I'd go to my appointment. But before I could get back to my ward, now down there at Brooks General Hospital, they've got big wards. They're bigger than our courthouse here, made up of several sections, you know, of various ailments. And I was in Ward 3. By the time I got back to Ward 3, my doctor down there asked me, well, he had already heard about it. How in the hell he heard about it? But he asked me, he said, did you tell him who your doctor was? I said, I'm trying to think what his name was. Wherever it was, I told him, no, sir. I said, I just scared like the devil. Which, you know, you would be. But anyway, it came out in the wash. Now, overall, Frank, I guess my life has been as, maybe to some, not as exciting, but to others, it's more than exciting over the things that's happened to me, both in scouting, Red Cross, crossing the ocean, being a foreign born, having to do the first grade over, not knowing my dadgum ABCs in order. So whether you might say I've accomplished anything, I don't know whether I could say I did, but I think I have, considering the circumstances I've had to
do it. I think you've had a full life.
Well,
I've
enjoyed it all, and just like I told Jeanette, I said, well, we've had a good family. I've never had any trouble with any of my children. And I'm real fortunate to there. That when the two boys were growing up, you know, that's something that's always in the back of your mind, how things going to turn out. And I've been pleased with it. Of course, I've been getting hell, of course, which you can imagine, having all this stuff stacked here, stacked there, and still have yet to get it all kind of so-called straightened out. But Jeanette has accepted it, that this is part, has been part of my life, so she's going to have to
put up with it for a while. Yeah,
put up with it for a while until I get it all straightened out, Frank.
Yeah, that's all right. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, no, but it was my intention that later on I would just kind of go out there and relax, take each and every one of these boxes, start making me stacks. Okay, this pertains to scouting. This pertains to something else, and then go back and take that same batch. Okay, this that pertains to scouting, pertains to scout meeting, pertains to troop activity, or pertains to this and that, and go till you get them all sectioned off. But it don't look like I'm going to do that, because I keep piling it back. I keep piling it back, Frank.
Oh, Lord. You're doing a pretty good job of it.
Well,
I appreciate you spending the time with me and letting me get some good information.
Well, Frank, if I can help you in any way, just holler at me. I'll sure give you.